Hey, is this thing on? Testing. Welcome to the Boost VC podcast, your weekly dose of fun, informative interviews with incredible guests from the Boost VC network. We'll dig into the latest topics around venture capital, startups, and emerging technologies. I'm your host, Adam Draper, founder and managing director of Boost VC and a fourth generation venture capitalist. Are you ready to rock? Tell me what you're gonna do. All right. Today we're joined by Tim Swift, founder of Roam Robotics. They're building an exoskeleton that makes people run faster, farther, makes them more mobile.
Yep. Our goal is to get people moving.
Yeah. So, okay, who are you? What is your mission?
Okay. My name's Tim Swift. I'm an engineer by training. But honestly, my mission, which has been my mission for a while now, is to make people move more, right? Make sure our bodies are not the barriers to us getting up and going doing things. I've been in a spot now where I've been building exoskeletons for about a decade, which is kind of a small cohort.
You've been building exoskeletons for 10 years. There aren't that many people who can say that. You're not that old.
Yeah. Like, this is
to
fair.
Be able to say something like that. What were you doing? What was your past?
Yeah, so in my previous life, I spent just about 6 years at a company called Exobionics. They built exoskeletons for stroke rehab, paraplegic mobility. It was really cool. It was a great experience for a young engineer specifically. I had some really good mentors in that role. Outside of that, I had the ability basically to dream up new robots from scratch and then write the software and see the robot come together that allowed people to walk again, right? Like, that's a pretty powerful feeling.
Oh, yeah.
And to be able to just like see that you're impacting people's lives, right? The number of tears I wiped away or people I held up so they could hug family members for the first time is pretty cool experience.
So you got to have like an emotional attachment to what you were doing. You were one-to-one being able to help these paraplegic and stroke
people. Especially because for the first 2 years of the machine, it was basically me and one other person who could run the device. So everywhere it went, I was either there or sitting off stage when it was running. You fell in love with the people. You learned their names. You knew about their kids. You knew their dog's names, right? And so they weren't just unknowns. These were your friends that you were giving the ability to walk again. It was a really cool experience.
That is incredible. How does one get into building exoskeletons for the first time? Like, what was your first entrepreneurial experience?
Yeah. So honestly, my first entrepreneurial experience goes back before exoskeletons. I knew from a very young age, probably like seventh grade, that my dream was I'm going to go to MIT, I'm going to change the world. They'd ask, how are you going to do it? I was like, I'm going to invent. And so when I was in junior high, I learned how to draft, and I drafted my whole way through all summer.
And drafting meaning?
Like drawing plans of warehouses, of shops, of things like that. So drafting like CAD plans. Right when I graduated high school, I started at a civil engineering firm. And this is really where I think I first had the opportunity to be entrepreneurial. I was 17. I was a solid half the age of the next youngest person at the company. And about 6 months in, I took over as CAD manager. And the reason I did that is because we were trying to build ways to be faster, to be more efficient. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, I can try to program. I can try to automate some of these things. And everybody was like, yeah, let the crazy kid in the corner take a shot at it. And before I knew it, we were a 20-person team competing with a 400-person shop right down the street. We developed the same number of acres in the city of Fresno as each other, and which was a crazy experience.
And you were able to make your lives more efficient with software.
Yeah, exactly. And really what it was is at that point, nobody knew how to write software. None of the people I'd ever interacted with. And it was just this scenario of like, there's a real problem that we want to solve. I said, well, great, I'll try to solve it. I might as well try to solve it if nobody else is going to.
I feel like at the base of every entrepreneur starts something, like it's that feeling where it's like, wait a second, like I could make this better.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you just go do it.
Why not make this better?
Yeah, I think why not is the best. It's like, this shouldn't be the way it is. It's not as efficient as it could be.
Exactly.
I love that. So you went from CAD drafting to Exobionics.
Yeah, so from there, I went to grad school. When I came to grad school, again, I came in with the exact same goal. The goal is I want to invent things to change the world. And exoskeletons were one of what my advisor, who became my advisor, was originally doing. And I was taken by my chances, the opportunity that would provide to change the world. I didn't realize what was possible and what was where the boundaries were. But that's kind of what led me into this space.
Well, not knowing the boundaries generally make you better at inventing the boundaries.
It's what make you willing to go chase something. Because if you knew all the reasons to stop when you started, you probably wouldn't start.
Looking back, starting a venture capital fund, definitely. Like there are a lot of things in the way.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, wow.
If all I did was list the hard times that have come between, you know, when I started this and where we are now, there would be very few people who would follow.
So. Yeah, exactly. Now that you're at the point where you've developed something in the Roam, what does it do and what do you think the opportunities of it are? Roam robotic.
What Roam is doing is we're making exoskeletons a different way. So to really provide context to what I'm doing now, you kind of have to go back to my story in my previous life. Like I say, at Exo, we made some amazing technology. I literally got to see people walk for the first time, right? The problem was, is we built $100,000 machines that weighed 50 plus pounds and had a peak speed of a half mile an hour. There's really only a few niches where I felt we could really see these impact people's lives. And I think I came to
because
a realization.
It was big and
it's
expensive.
Big and heavy. What you have to do is you have to make a robot that's accessible. I think I came to a realization that exoskeletons aren't going to scale like a robotic arm on a manufacturing floor, right? I think exoskeletons are going to have to scale more like consumer electronics. They have to get smaller. They have to get lighter. They have to get easier to use. That's really the barrier. And so this is what Roam exists to do, is to solve those problems. So I left Exo after just shy of 6 years and I founded Roam. Our goal was to solve these problems. And we started by making robots that are inflated primarily out of fabric and plastics. We sound crazy. I know that sounds crazy. It sounded crazy to me 4 years ago. Unfortunately, physics is usually right. And so when the physics says, right? When it says this is what you should build, you have one of two options. You can either deny it and ultimately be beat by someone who goes ahead and builds it, or you can go a different route. And so we said, let's go ahead and try it. And, you know, here we are 4 years later. We've made some things no one in the world's ever seen. And that's the foundation.
I think the original reason we got connected was because I was talking to someone and I said, my dream is to have an Iron Man suit. And then they said, oh, I got this company for you.
Yeah.
And I think it was Chris Duvos, and he sent me you guys. We hit it off. But what I realized is that the entire ecosystem of exoskeleton, how big is it? Like, how many people do you think are in the human augmentation exoskeleton space?
It's a small world. I would say that, like, companies that are doing this, like, especially at the startup scale, you're probably looking on the order of 6-7-ish companies that are doing this to a substantial level.
Yeah.
And you're probably 200-ish people in the whole US.
And I'd say most of the people are actually targeting a different section. They're targeting government or like something that's more militaristic.
Yep.
In my research, that's
totally
what I've seen.
Most of the exoskeleton world, you find yourself actually really funded through Department of Defense work, going out and making things for military. There's a handful of things on the other side which are chasing things that look like big manufacturing floors, right? They're trying to build the Sigourney Weaver exoskeleton from Aliens.
That's
old
pretty
school
cool
stuff.
And what made you choose not to go that direction? That's the traditional route for exoskeletons, from my perspective.
Yeah.
By the way, this is an aside, sorry, before you answer that.
Yeah.
I sort of spread this idea that I want an Iron Man suit. And I think if you type in Google investor Iron Man suit, like, my name pops up somewhere. Because I was reached out to by Talos, which is like the government agency that is building the Iron Man suit.
Yep.
And it was really, really funny. So I had an hour-long conversation. They were like, how do we get the smartest people working on this? And I was like, it's so funny because they have to be so private normally. And this is the first time they were like trying to sort of market.
Yeah.
To get people working on like the Iron Man suit.
Yep.
I just thought it was really, really interesting.
It's very funny, especially when you think of like where all these people sit in the space. The goal is to build Iron Man. The right way to look at it from my own perspective of why I chose not to do that is because I'm sick and tired of building crap that's not going to work.
Yeah.
I mean, that's unfortunate. I spent 6 years doing it, building robots that I loved the robots. They don't actually make sense in the world, right? The simple question that I ask is, my baby, literally, I taught it to walk, right? It was a $100,000 machine. How many people do you know outside of their house own a $100,000 anything?
Yeah.
Right? Very few. Even in the Silicon Valley, very few, right? Much less you get to the real world, and very few people have anything that looks like that. Some people, not even their house. The story that we told ourselves, that we're going to make these $100,000 things, and pretty soon they're going to be $80,000 things, and then everybody's going to have them, it just doesn't work. And yeah. So, you know,
that's sort of like the Segway story too. It was like a very expensive, they thought everyone was going to be driving the Segway. Like Segway was going to be the future of transportation. But the thing was just too expensive.
Yeah.
Like one's going to pay $40,000, whatever.
I remember being like, I want to say I was like 13 or 14 when it was revealed on Good Morning America. I remember before school watching that one morning.
It was fantastic.
And being like, okay, I missed it.
Yeah.
That's not it.
I miss it. Okay, we can all go home now.
Yeah. But I'm definitely in a spot where I saw this. And so, you know, you talk back about my experience at EXO, like it's literally wiping the tears away. That was great. And honestly, it changed me as an engineer, as a person. But the thing that impacted me more was after an hour of testing, every single person without fail sat down, got it back into their wheelchair and rolled out the door like it didn't happen.
Yeah.
That got old.
Yeah.
That got really old. Because like I say, I actually fell in love with these people.
Yeah. And they're ecstatic to get into this thing, walk for the first time ever.
Yeah.
And then they have to get out of it.
Exactly. And it never changed. And I just couldn't believe in my heart that we were going to change it. And so I felt like we were teasing people. And that's not what I'm here to do.
Yeah. Well, so then you iterate. You figured out another way to do it.
Exactly. This is where the stuff we're doing right now at Roam comes from, is the fundamental goal was how do you make things lighter and cheaper? And what we found is the problem, exoskeletons obviously is a unique market. The problem is actually robots. Like the traditional way you build robots, the robotics that make up an exoskeleton are primarily hydraulic or electromechanical. They're just not built to be weight optimized. They're built at a weight and at a size that just doesn't lend itself to sitting on the human body. So we had to rethink how you build robots to start with, which I'll be honest, I would have loved to be able to go out and just buy this stuff from somebody, right? I tell people all the time, we had to build new valves, we had to build new compressors, we had to build new actuators, we had to build new testing regimens. I would have loved to not have to do that stuff, but it's what was necessary in between the problem and the solution was that we needed a new set of robots and no one in the world made them. And everybody laughed when you asked for them. So we had to go make it ourselves. That's kind of how we got to where we are.
Yeah. It's super exciting for anyone who's listening. I got to try it. The boots with air compressor.
So we're working on maybe for context.
Sorry, I was trying to give them a picture of the thing is.
Yeah, so we're working on two primary platforms. We have one platform that is powered ankles, essentially. One of the things we found, and we started this work, again, we started this work talking to the military. Military came to us asking for Iron Man as well. So we spent 6 months convincing them that physics will win. Iron Man's not possible. It's a comic book for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then we spent 6 months basically building what I believe, or everything that's ever been mentioned before, is the highest performing exoskeleton we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only exoskeleton ever that can make people run faster and run for less energy.
Yeah.
So those are the boots that we threw you guys in. We're on average seeing a little over 10% metabolic benefit.
Yeah.
So you can just throw a random person in and they'll run 10%
farther, 10% faster.
Yeah. We actually are seeing data points. A few weeks ago, we threw a Navy SEAL, a special forces guy, and we were seeing 25% speed increases. He ran a mile in 4.5 minutes and we were like that. And he's like, oh yeah, by the way, I've never run faster than 6. There's some amazing, amazing data points.
When I tried it, the compressor was working okay. Uh-huh. It was fantastic in the way that it was working okay because I was running and you start to glide a little bit. Like it's sort of more of an avatar type run. like you're like gliding a little bit and you're like, well, I don't know if this is working. And then the boots cut out.
Yeah.
And then like you have to catch yourself and you're like, wow, this is definitely working because like I can barely keep up with how fast I was
running. It's really funny. So our other platform is we're working on knees and knees primarily fit in different areas. They're not running farther and faster. They're things that look like going upstairs, carrying weights, going down things, sitting and standing, all these kind of different areas. But in both of them, we actually are finding that, you know, whatever, you have positives and negatives of each technology. One of our negatives is that it becomes invisible to the operator.
Yeah, exactly.
And
it became invisible to me.
Yeah. And so we've had people, again, we're sitting at one of these places. We had a lot of generals with stars on their shoulders sitting around in the corner. And we had this one guy in the system and he starts yelling at us, turn this crap off. It's not doing anything. We're like, it's doing a lot.
Yeah.
And he's like, nope, I guarantee you it's not. So we killed it. And it's the only time we ever had somebody fall off the back of a treadmill. And we're just like, we told you it was doing a lot of work. And the problem is people completely lose track where the robot starts and they start.
It was one of the most fun startup demos I've ever done, though, because I ran like a half mile at like faster than I ever run it. And then also like it was exactly like every other startup demo in the way that it cut out at some point.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny, though, because this is actually now when we actually show this, we found that this is what you have to do.
Completely.
Is you have to run them in it and then be like, great, now you want to run without it? Oh, yeah, it'll be the same.
It is not. I think I'm one of few people who's looking at the exoskeleton space.
Yeah.
What do you think it's going to take for people to start looking?
So I find myself a lot of times feeling or taking a role that feels like a negative Nancy on this space. Mm-hmm. And it's not what I mean to do. I love it. I honestly, it's what I've spent the majority of my career doing is making these things a reality. My past is the problem as much as I'm the solution, I think now. What we have to do is we have to make robots that are actually useful, right? Like, there's a simple filter.
It's a causation correlation situation.
Yeah, exactly. There's a simple filter. And honestly, a lot of the people in my old life at Exo we ran the same thing. We'd say, we got to build robots that when somebody gets out of it, they don't say that it sucks, right? Like, they say, that was awesome. I liked that. I enjoyed it. It made me better. And it's weird because, like, you can do all the data you want. And when somebody hops out of your machine and goes, yeah, that sucked. It's done. You've lost.
It's the experience.
Exactly. There's nothing left. And so this is where I think the biggest bar for exoskeletons is.
And almost the name, like exoskeleton, makes you feel a little wrong about it too. Because
exactly.
It's like, it's a bit, you feel like I'm going to be stepping into a like big old mech warrior.
Exactly.
Suit.
It's funny because like I always tell people there's really kind of two sides that people build in their minds when you say exoskeleton. And they usually build like, again, they go back to like this alien style, you know, thousands of pound mech warrior.
Completely.
Or to Iron Man. And I'm like, so if you're going to dream those two dreams, I want you to dream Iron Man. It's just as wrong, but I want you to dream at least the one that's nimble and athletic and yeah. have moves. And this, I think, is that the crux of it all is like exoskeletons. I've never had a problem with getting people to dream about what exoskeletons can do.
Mm-hmm.
What our challenge has always been is lining up current capabilities
with
expectations, because it's really easy for people to get their expectations so far past you. But it's because we've spent 50 years telling the story about what exoskeletons can do. We all have these visions of Iron Man flying around. I was talking to somebody a few years ago now, but he was saying, you know, we want to build exoskeletons and make them a reality and put them to where we can make real people better. We don't need flying, not right away, but, and I'm like, flying? Like, flying is where you set the bar of like, we don't need it. And then you have to step back and think about it, especially at that point. No one had ever made an exoskeleton that can make someone walk better.
Yeah.
Forget run better, jump better. Fly was where he set the bar, right?
Yeah.
And that's not a problem. We should dream big, but we'd have to recognize that there's value in between.
And they're different. We did back a flying guy. So
yeah.
Technically, people can fly.
People can fly now. Yeah, there's data points out there. I totally am with you. But like we're now the data point that we can make people run, too.
You make people run. I think it's all necessary in some regard.
Yeah,
it's pushing us
the
towards.
The dream is great.
It's pushing us toward a dream.
It. Yeah.
Which I like. In 10 years, if you were to succeed, like you feel, hey, I solved my problem.
Yeah.
What does the world look like?
So this is the thing that motivates me, right? Is my dream is that exoskeletons become available. I don't have a belief that like, it's not about us winning or us doing this. There's room. This is an enormous opportunity out there. There's lots of lives to go affect. But what I want is when you want to dunk a basketball, I want you to go to a Foot Locker and buy a shoe that I'm selling that lets you dunk, right? When grandma and grandpa want to be able to stay mobile in their homes later into life and avoid going into a skilled nursing facility or an assisted living facility, I want them to be able to go to Walgreens and buy a device that lets them keep getting in and out of their chairs or going up and down their stairs.
Or if my grandpa wants to dunk a basketball.
Or dunk a basketball, right?
You want to be able
tie
to dunk
the
a
two
basketball.
Together, right? For myself, when I think of success, success isn't we found 100 people who are willing to use these devices. Success is I want these to permeate life for people and really be the fabric. Whenever your body becomes a barrier, I want this to be viewed as a solution.
I like that.
So
whenever your body sees a limit, you want this to be the thing that can push it another
50%. Yeah, and this is the thing, whenever I think back on exoskeletons in general, it's funny because we deal with a lot of partners who are saying, I want an exoskeleton for this. And I'll be like, why don't you use a stick instead, right? Or I want an exoskeleton for this. And I was like, I think a hammer might be the solution you're looking for. Is you don't need an exoskeleton all the time. But when the body has a limit and you want to maintain mobility, the majority of the times an exoskeleton is the only thing that works,
yeah.
right? you want to go for longer or have it anywhere you are or be able to put in more strength, but be able to go to all the different places that you have to exert.
Run 20 miles and not be winded to work. Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. Whenever mobility and capability are requirements, exoskeletons are a unique opportunity to overcome those things.
One of the things with your business specifically, we always tell, there are two things I always tell companies to do in a meeting. I say focus and I say talk to your customer. You can focus, like it definitely, but
we know
where are you talking to your customer? Like, what do you do in that regard?
Yeah. So I think anybody who is, there's a few filters out here. And this is what I've learned from a long time of building exoskeletons is if somebody says they're building an exoskeleton and they haven't talked to a customer, you know they're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that. And the reason is because we're not building a robot. Like a robot, I can put into a dark room one day, shut off the lights, and it'll just like, it'll do whatever I want it to do, right? Lift boxes, flip pancakes. I don't care. An exoskeleton's not a system by itself. The exoskeleton is integral with a human. Like, so I can't test an exoskeleton without having it being tested on a person as well. And so the only way we understand the world around us and how our systems work is putting these on people. And so, you know, I often use with my team, I'm like, listen, if you've gone 2 weeks without putting this on someone, you're probably wrong. It's probably going the wrong route.
And yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. Yeah. We're on ourselves all the time. We're doing things in a variety of areas, whether they be medical, recreational, industrial, even high performance, you know, possibly whether that is your military applications or the kind of they fit in different spaces. But in all of these areas, we have some representative customers or representative people, and we are putting the device on them and saying, use it. How would this help you? How would it work like this? How would this be in your space there? And so honestly, I think one of the reasons we've been able to be successful is not actually because of the technology is necessary. But the real challenge here is to find the market and people and line the technology up where you have value. And where you have value in markets that are bigger than 100 or 200 people. What we're doing is we're out there talking to people all the time and testing devices on people. I do think that this is lost in a lot of places, but in the exoskeleton space, like you just cannot play this game without putting it on people.
No, you have to test it on people.
Exactly. Yeah. Right? We always used to joke because there was a school of thought that felt we should build a dummy human. We should build a mannequin, essentially.
That's like the all the engineers get into a room and come up with a solution.
Yeah, like, exactly. And, you know, we had interns in my previous life. We had interns trying to build mannequins to fake humans. And it never was anywhere close because I would always point out, like, the person is not your enemy, though. They're not limp either. They are an active participant in what's going on. And I guarantee you
they're a part of the product.
Exactly. And they want it to succeed, too.
Yeah.
Right? I ran into this actually when I was getting my PhD. You do a defense, and one of the professors was like, I'll make you a doctor right now if you can prove to me beyond a shadow of a doubt that there's no way this can fail. And I was like, the only thing I can prove to you. The only thing I can prove is that it can fail.
Yeah.
Because the person is always stronger than my robot. And yeah. I was like, how is that possible? And you know, take Exo, for example. They had crutches. They could just pick themselves up and drop themselves on the ground any way they wanted. The device had no clue what to do. And so the reality is we're working in a system. And it's kind of interesting when you actually build these robots is it's a different context than building standard robots. Because the whole question you're asking is not what mathematically makes sense. Like, what does the math tell me? Your question is, it's like a psychological problem. It's like, okay, what I need is I need the torques, the things I apply to stay consistent. Why do I need them to stay consistent? Because I need to not spook the human who's inside the machine. Even though what I really need to do is I need to shut off forces as fast as possible, I also need to not scare my operator. They never need to be scared of me. And so it's this weird psychological game that's more than just building robots.
It is, I mean, I hadn't thought of it this way, but it is like the human is a piece of the product and the feature of the product is your product. It's exactly. Like this extra thing, this extra widget is going to enhance that person.
Mm-hmm. With that mindset, now you'll become creepy like I've been for the last 10 years. Find yourself watching people walk.
Yeah.
You know, I would walk around school and now when I'm like in a mall or at a baseball
game. You got to read Chew Dogs. We were talking about this earlier.
I'm literally watching people walk and I find myself like 5 feet behind some random, walking with my son, some random person watching their gait. And I'm like, oh man, they have pelvic twist. Their hips are way out over the side. The problem is,
would our product work for someone like that? Like, would it actually be able to support that?
Yeah. How do I build an algorithm? algorithm that's invariant to that style. Like you, so like this is the reason that I think exoskeletons have taken this long to mature, is even if you make the perfect device, your primary challenge is to handle the variability that just comes with people, right?
Yeah.
We're all different. Some of us are really weird too. For all of the things that are great about the variability and the uniqueness of people, it sucks for exoskeletons.
Yeah.
And so, but we have to handle it because everybody expects you put it on, it works.
Yes.
And that's what we have to deliver. So.
So the last part of the podcast is something I call the lightning round.
Okay.
And so I say lightning round, then you ask, answer questions, which is not too much different than the other part of it, but it's more specific. It's like very.
But I like how you sectioned it off.
I sectioned it off.
It makes it feel better. Okay. Yeah. Continue.
Lightning round. And I say that. Well, yeah. Lightning round. If you could travel back in time to one moment, what would that moment be?
When I entered college, grad school. I entered grad school because I came from a small town. Well, not small town. I came from a town that the expectations were that I'd go become an HVAC engineer, right? I got an engineering degree. I go build heating and air conditioners. And so when I walked into grad school, I walked into a different world and I was a little spooked. Like, am I going to be able to hack it? There were people around me who were pretty adamant and had told me quite openly to my face that I wouldn't be able to hack it. That was a defining moment in my life. And so, yeah, if I was going to go see something, I'd love to see my face.
Yeah.
As I walked out of that.
Yeah, and give a silent pat on the back.
Yeah.
Like a little
you'll be fine.
Yeah. You're good. You're good. It's going to be good.
Trust me, there was that voice in the back of my head, but it didn't always feel that way sometimes.
If you could have one superpower, what would it be?
Oh, man. I would see into the future because it would make all this a whole lot easier. If I could see into the future.
That's sort of what you're doing though.
Like, well, yeah.
You're sort of like, okay, this is going to exist in the future. I'll build it. Then it'll exist in the future.
Yeah.
It's like,
No. So if I was going to say one thing, I would say that. And I mean, whatever. We all live real lives. And, you know, I have two kids at home and a wife. And, you know, there's a lot of unknowns with making this stuff. I have no doubts that this is what the future will hold. I believe strongly we have the right solution to make that happen. But there's a lot between now and then.
So. Oh, yeah. You're trapped in an island with one video game and one food. What video game, what food?
Oh, so I love video games. So
this is going to be hard.
I know. They're running through my head. This is my release when I go home as I play video games. I would say right now, I'd probably say Destiny 2.
Okay, haven't played.
Well, you're missing out.
Okay, yeah. I am.
One food, I probably would take some Dr. Pepper. I'm a big fan of Dr. Pepper. Look,
that's it? Like, you're on an island?
You said,
you said one.
You
drop off one Dr. Pepper, please. Yeah.
My goodness, you said one. I mean, I'm kind of screwed when I'm on an island
it's
already.
True. I think that is very impressive that that's the thing. I mean, as far as soda beverages, it is the most underrated. I agree.
Yeah.
Why are you going to win?
I'm going to win because I think we understand the problem.
Okay.
And I think it's impossible to win if you don't know what you're doing.
So. And what is your definition of success?
Definition of success is easy. I want to see robots in the hands of real people. Simple as that.
Great. Well, thanks for being on the Boost CC podcast.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me.
Unfortunately, we don't have enough time for Mark Zuckerberg today. But tune in next week when he's available. Thank you so much for tuning in during your busy day to learn more about emerging technologies. We at Boost VC are happy that you're a part of our community. Make sure to check us out at Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Boost VC. Or go to our website, www.boost.vc. And remember, love your tribe, hustle every day, and stay true to yourself. This is Adam Draper, signing off.
Big black eagles flying around this town. One of these days he's gonna pay a visit, drop his load on the ground. What you gonna